If you haven't tried Super Beet Soft Chews, you are missing out. Super Beet Soft Chews are a delicious snack you can take on the go and support your heart health. Super Beets Chews combine non-GMO beets with a powerful new ingredient, grapeseed extract. The grapeseed extract used in Super Beet Soft Chews has been clinically shown to be 2 times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure as a healthy lifestyle alone. Better blood pressure means more energy, the way nature intended, without the jittery caffeine or stimulants. Now you can take just 2 delicious chews a day, anytime, anywhere, to get the blood pressure support you need and the energy you want. Do what I did and support your heart health with delicious Super Beets Chews. Get your Super Beets Chews today at danasbeets.com, and when you buy 2 bags, they'll throw in the third for free. That's danasbeets.com to get a free bag of Super Beets Soft Chews when you purchase 2. danasbeets.com.
I get this question. It seems like 1,000 times a day people are panicking, thinking I'm about to shut down Texas again. The answer is no, that is not the goal. I've been abundantly clear. I've been saying exactly what the head of CDC said today. What the head of CDC said today, and that is, if everyone can adopt the practice of wearing a face mask for the next 4 weeks, we will be able to get COVID-19 under control. That is my message when I issued that executive order. I said that what I want to do is to make sure that everyone begins to wear a mask so that we will be able to get COVID-19 under control, so that we will not have to shut Texas back down.
I don't want to shut Texas back down. Are we not shutting it back down, or are we don't want to shut it back down?
Both.
What came out of that?
Both.
I'm curious.
I hope both.
I'm asking for a friend.
Both.
It's me. I'm the friend. Welcome back to the show. Welcome to the show. It's Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Yay. It's Friday. It means we get to stay home. We're all excited about that. Bold move, bold strategy there, Cotton. All right. So I have a bunch of stuff for you up at danalash.com. Additionally, make sure that you check out the simulcast of the show. Official Dana Lash on Facebook, as well as YouTube at DLash on Twitter, Parler Dana Lash, blah, 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 blah. My gosh, everything. You guys know where I am. Google my damn name. Channel 248, Pluto TV via the first. And I'm in a new Caltech shirt today because America. It's actually really cool. They have their stuff is their. It's like the coolest. This is my new favorite. It's really lightweight and everything. It's made by Eagles, Free Eagles, that hand weave the cotton fibers. So. I guess we're not going to shut down. I don't know what else I'm supposed to take away from that. I wish we did not have to. I wish there wasn't a mask mandate. Coming up, we're going to speak with the Georgia governor. Brian Kemp's going to join us because he is expecting Georgians to, you know what, you're grown adults. Figure out if you want to cover your face or not. You're grown folks. Why do I have to figure this out for you? That's basically what Brian Kemp is saying, right? It's figure it out for yourselves and make up.
He's doing it more diplomatically. Obviously.
Yeah, he's not saying it like that. This is why I couldn't be in elected office, because I would go up, if I was Brian Kemp, I would go up to the mic, nor do I ever want to be, because I don't care about I want to do what I want to do, and I want everybody else to leave me alone. It's so like Zoolander in a way, right? I just want to do what I want to do. But my whole point, I would have gone up to the mic and had just said, you know what, you're grown-ass adults. Why are you looking to me to tell you to do stuff? I mean, I'll tell you to do things, but why? That's what I would say. Yes, Steve. Well, I know we have the audio, but I was just saying that's what I would say. But Brian Kemp is being a heck of a lot nicer about it because, you know, he's a governor. He's an elected office. You can't be me. And this is what he had to say about it.
Now, I know that many well-intentioned and well-informed Georgians want a mask mandate. And while we all agree that wearing a mask is effective, I'm confident that Georgians don't need a mandate to do the right thing. I know that Georgians can rise to this challenge, and they will.
There, see, he's nice. He's nice about it.
Trust his people.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, it's, he's very nice about it. But I'm telling you, that's kind of how you have to be. The idea that you're just going to demand that people put a face diaper on or face a $250 fine isn't gonna work out. We're gonna get into that more. We're gonna talk with Governor Brian Kemp later on in the program as well. So two things. The first is, what the heck is happening in Berkeley? This is crazy. I saw this last night, and I went and was trying to find out as much as I could about it. It's real. It's real. This is absolutely a real thing. So the story is that Berkeley's city council, they approved this huge motion on police reform, right? And they decided that they were going to do a number of things, like reduce the budget by at least 50%. They were going to, they blended a bunch of proposals together. They're going to have an audit of police calls. That was one of them. They all put it together in what they called an omnibus motion. They're going to have a robust community process around public safety reforms. Okay. And they're also going to create BerkDOT. The way that they're going to ensure a racial justice lens in traffic enforcement, and to reduce or eliminate, and I'm reading verbatim, pretextual stops based on minor traffic violations. Oh, but there's more. They're going to develop a pilot program to reassign non-criminal police service calls to a new specialized care unit of network crisis responders. And they're also going to look at other police calls and traffic stops. They want to narrow the police focus. They only want officers to focus on violent and criminal matters as opposed to mental health crises or homeless camps. Now, the public process, now when they reduce the budget, they're apparently going to remove police from traffic stops. Okay. And in their place, what they would like to implement, I mean, again, it's Berkeley, is like a citizens brigade, an unarmed citizens brigade to handle the traffic stops. And safe, right? I mean, nothing sounds safer than that. I mean, that's like the safest thing in the world. So they want citizens to handle the traffic stops. And apparently this has, I guess it has a lot of support from people there in Berkeley. Oh, man. So there, I don't know what, it doesn't say, it doesn't actually like specify what training these citizens would actually receive. I would think that the new department that they would create from this would actually cause a lot more problems than not. Because how are you, if you're going to have a citizens brigade, they're not going to be police, so they're not going to have immunity from, they're going to have any, they're going to carry a lot of liability because they're not going to technically be police officers. So how do you handle that? If you're going to hire a citizens, you're going to establish a citizens brigade to make, handle the traffic stops. How are you going to have cameras? Because, and then how are you going to get those cameras? Are you going to have to create an entire, you're going to, I mean, it sounds like they're going to have to create an entirely new department and with entirely new infrastructure and license plate scanners. And are they going to are they going to drive their own vehicles? I can't imagine a citizen driving their own vehicle to do this. So how in the hell does this stop? Furthermore, as I understand it, citizens don't have an obligation if they're ordered to stop by another citizen. So how does that work? I'm made of questions about how this is working. And also, have you seen the videos and the numbers of officers that you think it's just a regular run-of-the-mill traffic stop, but oh no, that is a drug dealer behind the wheel, and you just caught them as they have a bunch of stuff in their trunk. And I mean, I can't tell you how many videos I've seen of cops being shot during traffic stops. It's actually some of the riskiest police work that's out there. And are these people going to have de-escalation training? Are these people going to, I mean, that's just the thing. None of this has been answered. It's just feel good on, well, look, we're doing something. We're removing the police officers and we're creating, this sounds like a comedy sketch. It sounds like a comedy sketch. And It's actually kind of scary to think about this. I mean, people all say that, you know, there's so many discussions about, oh, well, you know, racial motivation during police stops, etc. If you really feel that there is a problem with the way the police are operating, instead of just cutting it down and eliminating it, why not, like, focus on the things that you can improve? Like when New York, when they suspended the plainclothes division, right? That was actually a way that they were able to engage repeat offenders, prohibited possessors who were using illegally possessed guns in commission of further felonies. But apparently none of this happened. I mean, they decided we're not going to improve it. We're just going to eliminate it. This thing, if I see just some random dude who's flagging me down and trying to stop me because he thinks that I violated a traffic law, I ain't stopping. Come catch me. Mm-hmm. Come and take it. I'm not pulling over for you. And I wouldn't have any obligation to either. So wait a minute, you're going to have people who are totally unaccountable to the public who are going to be doing the traffic stops? Tell me how well that works out after you saw Chaz Chop, right? How much you want to bet the SoundCloud Warlord, sidebar, that's actually a really good like artist name, SoundCloud Warlord.
I like that.
I still haven't figured out like what genre that would be in, or if it would be like a solo person, you know, or if it would be like a group of people. Or maybe like a duo, like Daft Punk, but some...
You've done it before. I have it in my list already.
I have not done SoundCloud. I swear I have not.
How did it get in my list? How did it get in my list if you've never done it before? Stop it. You did it before.
I swear I haven't.
You did it.
I don't think I did.
It's still good.
I don't know.
Still good.
Yeah. Well, with this whole thing, I don't know. I have worries. We're going to talk a little bit more. I mean, I've been looking. They're not explaining how they're going to accomplish this. Also, Washington Post, I have a piece up at danalash.com. Washington Post some of the most awful methodology I've ever seen. They decided to run a piece where they say that it's legal gun purchases and not riots that are causing the crime spike. Not making this up. I have it all linked up at danalash.com. It's legal gun purchases, not riots, that are causing the crime spike. And they say that they've been charting the number of universal background checks processed since the beginning of the lockdown and, you know, all of the national unrest. And legal purchasers, they surmise, are driven by racism. And they're buying all of these guns legally so they can shoot people throughout America's streets, which is why the crime rate has spiked. But wait a minute. I thought that the streets were full of peaceful protesters.
Right.
I'm confused. A little tricky. But the thing that really got me, and they touched on this a couple of times, they were talking about the numbers of purchases per month since 2020, and they said half of the increase occurred in June alone. This pattern highlights an important potential consequence that may result from this tumultuous period. More firearms in the hands of private citizens. That sounds like a wonderful thing to me.
Right.
I mean, in fact, you could just send me a Hallmark card that says more firearms in the hands of private citizens, and that is like better than just happy birthday.
Right?
Right? That's line scares the hell out of them. It scares the hell out of anti-gun activists. And they realize that push for gun control, all of that was just obliterated by their whole defund the police rhetoric, the riot murders, the video of mothers being stabbed and beaten in the street while they're pushing their baby in their stroller. This is their Hail Mary, this mass character assassination attempt. So I looked at two different studies, and I'll dive into those coming up. But one was from Brookings, and then the other was it wasn't even a study, it was just some BS, that was funded by two gun control groups and one gun control group that is also some other things, including climate. Now, I'm not saying guilt by association, but I'm just saying when your methodology is already crap, the fact that you're funded by these far-left entities does not strengthen your credibility. See what I'm saying? So we'll get into all of that and more. We have Mailbag of Hate coming up. We got today's stupidity as well today. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp will join us later on in the show. And one thing I'm going to throw out there for you to think about, will masks be used as voter suppression? A story that I will share with you coming up. You don't want to miss it. As we also, and don't forget, all the live stream the whole show, official Dana Lash on Facebook and on YouTube, 248 Pluto TV via the first. We'll be right back with more show. If you haven't tried Super Beet Soft Chews, you are missing out. Super Beet Soft Chews are a delicious snack you can take on the go and support your heart health. Super Beets Chews combine non-GMO beets with a powerful new ingredient, grapeseed extract. The grapeseed extract used in Super Beet Soft Chews has been clinically shown to be 2 times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure as a healthy lifestyle alone. Better blood pressure means more energy, the way nature intended, without the jittery caffeine or stimulants. Now you can take just 2 delicious chews a day, anytime, anywhere, to get the blood pressure support you need and the energy you want. Do what I did and support your heart health with delicious Super Beets Chews. Get your Super Beets Chews today at danasbeets.com, and when you buy 2 bags, they'll throw in the 3rd for free. That's danasbeets.com to get a free bag of Super Beets Soft Chews when you purchase 2. danasbeets.com.
Watch all 3 hours of The Dana Show live on Facebook, YouTube, or The First, Channel 248 on Pluto TV.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
So one headline, we're going to talk about this coming up in cancel culture. A model in Texas was stripped of her swimsuit pageant title because she posted All Lives Matter on the Facebook and was asking questions about George Floyd, and so they stripped her of her title. That's really, really not beauty pageants are doing this stuff. You people put pageant, you put ribbons on chicks in swimsuits. Shut up.
So
why are you sitting here?
Beauty, it's about political.
It's about political belief. Stances. Yeah. It's a woke off. It's a woke pageant. Wow. Ooh, remind me to come back to that. Yeah, that's a really good idea. Also, this is good. We've talked about this on the show before. In fact, I've spoken about this with a number of lawmakers, senators, and members of the House. The Senate GOP is now looking to funnel the coronavirus liability cases to federal court. So what they're trying to do is what we've been asking, is to make sure that businesses and schools, other organizations have legal protections for where if it's personal injury, medical liability, specifically from the coronavirus pandemic. And they want it to be a temporary set of legal protections. So it's not something that would, you know, stick around forever. It would be protecting businesses the way that I understand it in Wall Street Journal during the pandemic and while all of this is happening, which, you know, you really need that because it's going to be very difficult for businesses to bounce back otherwise. The NBA apparently has a virus hotline. Is that how I understand it? They have a virus hotline, if I could get this thing to open.
A snitch hotline.
Well, it's a virus hotline, but you're supposed to tell on people if they have the virus. Because I'm going to take my internet router and I'm going to throw it up in the air and I'm going to shoot it with my damn KSG because it's not opening anything right now.
They have an anonymous hotline.
Yeah, that's a long headline. The NBA's anonymous hotline, they've been running. This is the Disneyland bubble because apparently it's for players to call each other out and they're all telling on each other. Everybody's telling on each other. They said that there have been multiple tips placed on their NBA's snitch hotline for the virus to report protocol violations on campus, etc. And some of them have said, look, fellow NBA players, don't call the snitch hotline. And don't cross the line to get Postmates. Don't fly LA workout. And the Brooklyn Nets are coming for you. I mean, they've been joking around, but they've actually have been telling on each other a lot. So this very short season will be fun, right? We have a lot more on the way, including, could masks actually be used as a tool of voter suppression? We'll discuss that coming up.
Follow Dana on Twitter at DLash and official Dana Lash on Facebook.
I saw a post from Lori Lightfoot, the mayor, who called the press secretary Karen. Literally called her Karen. Is that racist?
Racist?
Is it racist?
I don't know.
Is it racist, Steve? Yeah. If the mayor of Chicago calls the press secretary Karen. How's it different from a Becky?
I think we can all agree that Karen was invented in 2020, so we didn't have to, as a non-racial insult.
Karen. She's the mayor of Chicago, FFS. I mean, come on. It's a Karen. That name, you know what? That name is going to probably die off because of this. Welcome back to the show, DanaLash.com. So we were talking about Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg on break because She issued a statement today saying that she began a course of chemotherapy on May 19th. She has cancer. She said that she's a course of chemotherapy to treat a recurrence of cancer. Her periodic scan in February, followed by a biopsy, revealed she had lesions on her liver, and that she was hospitalized to remove gallstones and an infected that were unrelated. The immunotherapy, she said, first assayed proved unsuccessful, and so she's trying chemotherapy. So that's a rough go of it. And I always say like this: if Antonin Scalia got along with RBG, that's good enough for me, right? Because that's. But Steve did bring up that it is 2020. And remember, by the way, when this year started off so great and it was like Ricky Gervais giving a, right. You know, when he was hosting an award show and we were like, yeah, wah. And then all of this happened. And he says, it's 2020. Of course, something awful would happen. Of course, you know, you couldn't get out of 2020 without RBG. We're not even halfway. We're barely halfway in damn 2020.
Just over half.
Did you see the meme about if 2020 were a relationship? What would it look like? Like this.
Are you friends with her, yes or no?
Hey, this is 2020 in the relationship.
I don't give a f***.
Like 2020 were a relationship.
My sneakers are dirty.
Stop! You psycho!
Stop! This is 2020 if it was a relationship. It's Ron and Sam. That is exactly it. We are all like caught up in this wave of abuse. My gosh. I feel like DJ Pauly D right now. Like, if they don't stop, I'm going to just kill myself. I'm just going to swear. Oh, my gosh. What else can happen? We've had flipping murder hornets, and there's a squirrel with the plague, and all kinds of bad things are happening. They made the Ford Bronco a weird orange color. What else bad can happen?
Kill myself.
That's
exactly
all I'm saying.
There'll be no more DJ. I will kill myself if they're still together.
Oh my gosh, this is all of us right now. That's all of us right now. Oh my gosh. It's where we all are. We had a I don't even want to go outside anymore. That's the other thing. If you go outside, somebody's gonna scream at you for something. You don't even know what it is. It's just take a risk. It's a gamble, right?
True.
It's like playing Trouble. You could be screamed at because you're not wearing a mask, or they don't like your mask, or you're wearing your mask wrong. Sidebar: do they say to wear it on your, like, specifically mouth and nose, or can you wear it anywhere? I am still technically wearing the mask. It's my mask hat. That's what it is. It's my mask hat.
Or you could be
you
like
get screamed
or,
at.
Or you could be like Deanna during quarantine.
I was drunk. I want to snuggle. Nothing like crazy. Like, I really just wanted to snuggle. And this bitch laughs.
No, you don't.
That's the rest of us in quarantine. Oh my gosh. But really, you get yelled at if you're maybe wearing a mask, or if you're white, or if they think you're white, like Kane.
Yeah.
Kane's a white Hispanic.
Desperately trying to tan here recently.
That doesn't matter anymore, because as we've seen, it doesn't matter. You can't.
No,
it's not going to happen for you, because I mean, apparently Hispanic police officers, like what we saw McAllen, God love them, we're that whole city and all their families were praying for them. Apparently they were, it doesn't matter. Nothing matters. And it's, you used to have the 1 year old black baby who was shot. You have, the woman who was attacked while she was strolling down with her child, strolling down the sidewalk, attacked by a dude. It doesn't matter. Women, children, black, white, Hispanic. It's just a lack of respect for life, period. It's not even about one particular, the lifespan of a particular demographic at this point. Now, you can't even go outside. You'll get bit by a plague-ridden squirrel,
right,
and screamed at by some Karen, right, over masks. Right? And then somebody will probably come and hit you. I don't know. This is 2020. Stop, Ron, stop.
Don't forget about the iguanas and alligators.
I'm trying to.
My God, 2020 yeah. Something.
So speaking of masks, I was having a very interesting conversation yesterday with a friend of mine. And I'm curious about whether or not, as we come rolling up on 2020, whether or not you're going to see people denied their right to vote because of the mask situation. Like, what if we're still here in November? Like in Texas, we got this mask mandate. You're out in public, you gotta wear a mask. Well, not everybody can wear a mask. Some people legitimately, like right now, my allergies flared up again and my eustachian tubes are closed. So I'm in a wind tunnel. So if I sound weird, that's why. And I can't totally breathe out of my face at all, hardly. There's no way I could wear a mask right now if I had to go outside. There's no way. And I, you know, do the allergy, all the allergy stuff. I have super severe allergies. No way I could. I mean, there's medically no way I could, because I would not be able to. I mean, it covers. I wouldn't be able to breathe. It covers my mouth. I'd be like, it'd be awful. So what happens if, you know, someone has a health issue or they just don't want to? And you have these mandates in place and someone goes in to vote and maybe you can't vote or you're turned away. Now, I don't know. I was talking to a friend of mine, because I know that there has been discussion in some certain locales. Knoxville, Tennessee is apparently having this discussion because their governor was going to be talking clarifications on masks in Tennessee today. And I know that the Board of Health in Knoxville was having these conversations as to whether or not people should be expected to wear a mask if they go vote. And the concern I have is if you have, you know, the Board of Health making policy decisions that elected officials are supposed to make that are representing voters, if they're making these decisions as it relates to rights and health, and you are not able to have any kind of influence in that. So I'm bringing this up now because we're like 120 some odd days away from voting day. And I think it is incredibly important of you, if you have not done so already, is find out what in your county, in your city, your locality, you need to know ahead of time if there is a second wave. Like everyone says, oh my gosh, this winter, late fall, we're going to have something conveniently right around when the election's happening. You need to find out now and have a strategy prepared for something like this, if it happens around November, if it happens when we're going to vote, and there are these mandates in place, how is that going to work out? Are people going to be turned away if they don't have masks to go and vote? Some have argued that federal elections, those polling sites, they should be treated as federal land. And then some other, my attorney friends were bringing up precedent that no. I find all of that irrelevant to the point that you should have a strategy in place and you need to know where your elected officials stand on this. And if we have like a lockdown like this, how are we going to, I think you should get out and vote, period. And I don't think a lockdown should prevent that at all whatsoever. Nor do I think absence of a mask should prevent it at all whatsoever. But not all counties are staffed with elected officials who recognize rights and limitations of government. So that's where you come in, because your job as a citizen is to hold people accountable and also show them the path which they need to go down. And I think you need to be asking your Board of Health where they're at. And I think you need to ask your elected officials. You need to ask your mayor. You need to talk to your city council. And you need to get this before them now. Because because according to my friend, when they were having this discussion in Knoxville, they had not prepared for this at this point. What happened? And I'm, you know, these are city officials. So what happens if you haven't prepared? November comes, you know, it's a global lockdown again, and people are going to be turned away if they don't wear masks. Masks are, unless you do the cloth ones, which don't do anything, are hard to come by. Are they going to give them out? How does that work? So I'm made of questions on this, but you need to start asking your elected officials now, as opposed to waiting until like the first week of November. So I mean, I've already sent emails out. Oh, hi, you know me. Hi. Hi, I'm Dana. I'm your constituent. So this is what I need to know. So ask them that. Send your elected officials, your city council, your board of health, your mayor, your alderman, wherever you are, send out, ask them, you know, what is the protocol going to be if there is, come November, we are still in this situation? Or if we have a lockdown or a mask mandate, will masks be required of people to go and vote in the election? If so, based on what? What will your criteria be for that? And secondly, what if people, A, can't wear them for health, or B, don't want to wear them? Are they going to get, like, what, an absentee ballot? How does that work? So these are questions that need to be asked now. And I'd say homework, but it's your responsibility as an American citizen. We all talk a great game about being patriotic and, you know, loving our eagle and our flag and all this stuff. You got to do this. You are responsible for maintaining liberty, and this is part of it. Your responsibility is to, you are obligated to send this email and ask your elected officials. And I want to hear back from you when you do. You can send it, I think it's info@danalash.com. I want to hear back from you. Forward me your responses from city officials. Let me know of your conversations with them. I'm being totally serious about this. Because what if, I mean, I honestly, in counties where, like in places in Florida where you had the local news that was asking these health centers and processing centers about their reporting for positive rates, and one facility was saying, oh yeah, that first it was originally reported 98% positive, and when the local local, I think it was ABC affiliate there in Florida, reached out, they said, actually no, where did you get that? It's 9%. Actually, it's specifically 9.4%. There was like anywhere from between 70 to 90% differences in real and then what was originally reported. And they're basing everything from lockdowns to start dates for school and voting protocol on this. Now, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I am going to say that I do not trust anyone anywhere if they're going to take advantage of reporting positive rates and fatalities as it relates to a virus. I don't trust them to not use a mask order to suppress voter turnout or suppress votes, period. So you need to be proactive about this now, and you need to be getting in touch with your elected officials now. This is your job. Do not trust anyone to do what is your job as a citizen. That is how we get big government, when you cede power more and more to those individuals that you elect to represent you because you feel like you don't have time or you just don't want to. Tough. Freedom means sometimes you can't watch or look for clips of Ron and Sam fighting to play on radio. Sometimes it means you got to send an email to your elected officials and you got to pick up the phone and call some people. That's what that is. And be grateful that you have too much liberty to attend to, because if you complain about it, what's the alternative? Not having any to attend to. Goodness. We have a lot more on the way, including the Smithsonian took down their white people are BS poster, their little display thing. We'll talk about that. We'll also get into, I have a crazy story coming out of Los Angeles. A teenage boy was giving estrogen to basically as a behavioral drug, without apparently his family knowing or anything else. And there's some serious side effects to that. He wasn't transitioning. It was a behavioral issue. Yeah, this is pretty crazy. We'll discuss that as well coming up. And we are also going to get into the latest with the big hack with Twitter. Josh Hawley, Senator Josh Hawley, he's been busy. He's not only asked the DOJ to look in the Mark McCloskey case, but he's also now, he sent a letter to Twitter and he's asking a number of questions about that. We got the latest, more coronavirus, tests are racist, and so much more. Yeah, they are, apparently. You don't want to miss it.
Head to DanaRadio.com for the latest videos, blog posts, and podcasts.
DanaLash.com. I'm going to have something coming up here soon about disgraced Scott Israel, because the Florida Sun Sentinel just endorsed him. This is unbelievable. All the compliments that I've given the Florida Sun Sentinel, I take back now. Right. Y'all are trash. They actually righted this sentence. Can you believe this? They write, quote, with time, the judgment seems harsh. Israel could not have prevented the tragedy. The school system was more to blame. And so was the FBI, which did nothing about a credible warning of a potential school shooter. Israel's most serious failing was a policy that left it to a deputy's discretion whether or not to engage. Oh, my gosh. He was aware. They had received, documented, numerous calls. Scott Israel had, along with Robert Runcie, partnered with him. They held a press conference together to announce and cheer the program the program wherein it was designed to minimize the appearance of school-to-prison pipeline by not reporting crimes and then counting that as a reduction of crime. Andy Pollack's book, Why Meadow Died, gets into every single detail of this. And for the Sun Sentinel, I get it. They hate Ron DeSantis. The Florida Sun Sentinel hates Ron DeSantis so bad, they would rather endorse, because they know that Scott Israel hates Ron DeSantis and they want to use Scott Israel so bad as a cudgel against DeSantis. The Florida Sun Sentinel hates Ron DeSantis so bad, they are willing to endorse a disgraced, incompetent, moronic hothead like Scott Israel, who his incompetency led to the deaths of children and their teachers at Parkland. They would rather endorse him because they cannot stand Ron DeSantis so badly over the Sheriff Tony there in Broward, who actually has training, is keeping deputies up to date with training. Because remember that Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Commission discovered that Scott Israel wasn't even keeping his deputies up to date. He had over 85% vote of no confidence. Florida Sun Sentinel is giving a finger to Broward police officers who voted overwhelmingly against Scott Israel, and a finger to all of those who suffered because of that man's incompetency. Y'all, my list now. Stick with us.
This segment of the Dana Show podcast is brought to you by Kel-Tec. They don't make ordinary firearms. They invent better ones. Innovation, performance, Kel-Tec. Visit them at keltecweapons.com.
If the individuals who were killed that incredible, horrific day in Stoneman Douglas attended a high school like Boyd Anderson, what have you, a minority high school, we never would have been in this mess right now. This was all about a governor trying to impose his will.
Yeah. Oh, it's taking everything I have. So, welcome back to the show. I'm Dana Lash, at DLash on Twitter, official Dana Lash on Facebook, channel 248 Pluto TV via the first, as well as YouTube, Facebook, all that stuff, Parler, Dana Lash. So, I'm just going to tell you here, we're going to be getting into some cancel culture stuff. Tests are racist now. A lot of stuff with the, you know, potential shutdowns, all this stuff. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp will be joining us later on. But as I was talking last hour before we went to break, so the Florida Sun Sentinel has come out and they've decided to endorse the disgraced, the guy who they originally said, the same editorial board originally said was disastrous. Now they came out and said, oh, he wasn't so bad, I guess. Oh. And they endorsed him. Scott Israel.
Journalism.
Mm-hmm. Journalism. Oh, if you follow me on Twitter, I'm scorched earth right now. The Sun Sentinel had previously called his leadership disastrous. This, a guy who had, actually was over, it was about 86% of his police union voted against him. He admitted in the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Commission, the investigative body that was put together featuring law enforcement officers, as well as teachers and parents, Parkland parents, including Ryan Petty, a friend of mine, that was put together to investigate what went wrong and what can be improved. And it was from that commission that they had the Guardian program, etc., and some other proactive measures to prevent something like this from happening again. And while they were having this investigation, the commission learned that Scott Israel, during his time as Broward sheriff, apparently didn't even bother to keep up the training for his deputies. That's why they all froze when they were there at Parkland, is because they had not been instructed, as is his job. He didn't have any kind of plan in place. It's why Coral Springs, when Coral Springs showed up, they immediately went in because Coral Springs was kept up with training. And deputies, that's what the sheriff is supposed to do. I can't hold them. I can't hold all of the, well, except the Peterson. I can't him. But, and Scott Israel had said that Peterson, the man who didn't go in and hid in his car, basically, that, oh, it's not my fault. He actually said that. He literally said it. Come at me. I'll play you audio. And this guy who didn't have his deputies trained, and as I said, Coral Springs came in. It's why Coral Springs sheriff immediately blasted him, blasted Scott Israel the day after the massacre, which I thought was so odd. Remember how we were talking about that on air? And I'm like, what is going on here? It's because Coral Springs, they actually said that Scott Israel was looking for TV cameras and trying to get interviews while everyone else was policing. Yep. He's a hothead. Have you seen him, his fight with a reporter who just simply asked him a question in a parking lot and he started getting real weird and like trying to be tough guy with him? Yeah. This was a guy who sat on a stage of a town hall on national television and blamed me for his incompetency. Scott Israel blamed me, a mom in Dallas who had not even heard of him or that school until the massacre had happened. And Scott Israel literally sat on stage, told me that his incompetency was my fault. I was the only one on that stage that asked him the hard questions. I was the only one on that stage that had done my homework. I knew exactly how many times Scott Israel and his department had been made aware of this murderer, his behavior, and potential danger from this individual. Neighbors were saying that police had visited that home and that kid dozens, was the word that they used, dozens of times while he was growing up. Everyone knew it was a problem. Under Florida law, because of the digital threats that this dude had been sending other students, Scott Israel could have arrested him and prevented him from ever purchasing the firearm that he went out there and murdered people with. But guess what? Scott Israel didn't do that, just like he didn't train his deputies, just like he really didn't do anything except pay off people so he could stay in power. I mean, according to all the local reports anyway. No, this guy sat on stage and told me it was my fault. Tried to incite a rage mob against me. He's an embarrassment to the badge. And if every single officer was like Scott Israel, and God, I am so grateful to God that they are not. If every single officer was like Scott Israel, I'd be out in the streets too. Scott Israel is the epitome of a bad cop. He is an avatar for it. He is an avatar of corruption, of abuse of power. And the Florida Sun Sentinel hates Ron DeSantis so bad. They hate this guy so bad. Ron DeSantis is such a threat to Democrats. They see him as a powerful 2024 contender. They see him as a potential heir for the Republican Party after Trump finishes out his next term. They see Ron DeSantis as being the next guy. And the Democrats want to destroy him. And the Sun Sentinel does not care about the objections of over 86% of police officers that voted against Scott Israel. They showed no confidence, his own union. The Florida Sun Sentinel apparently doesn't care that parents in that area were saying, no, we do not want him back. Miami Herald had a great story on this. Now, they don't care. They don't care about that. They don't even care that some of the students were saying, we don't want him back. They don't care, apparently, that he didn't keep his deputies trained. They don't care that he lied on a form when he was getting his background check in 2004 about whether or not he had ever been a defendant in a lawsuit or had a lien on him. You want me to go on? Because I am strapped for bear anytime this guy's name comes up. I've made it my life's mission. Scott Israel made sure of that when he decided to accuse me on that stage. And unlike him, I'm not a coward. No, the Sun Sentinel, they hate Ron DeSantis so much, they're willing to endorse this guy over the bodies of students, over the objections of parents, the objections of so many others who respectfully and honorably wear the badge. The Sun Sentinel is willing to stand by a guy whose incompetency contributed to the deaths of so many because they hate Ron DeSantis so bad. Now, you tell me that I shouldn't call the Florida Sun Sentinel garbage. Its editorial board, garbage. They're hypocrites. The same editorial board that gave a list of all of the horrific things that this guy has done, that I don't even know how the guy was ever in this position in the first place. He wants power, but not the actual responsibility. He wants the notoriety, but not the actual day-to-day grind. He wants all of the attention, but none of the work. That is who this guy is. He is every grifter ever just reduced down to one person. And the Sun Sentinel has the audacity. Oh, well, it's nuts. They actually said that. That's not so bad. Overall, he was a good sheriff. What? They're mad because Sheriff Tony. Sheriff Tony's done a good job so far. And they inaccurately said that Sheriff Tony, when he was younger, had shot and killed another individual. By the way, I've written a piece on this. If you want to see some journalism, you can visit danalash.com, where I talked about how actually they were all aware of that. Sheriff Tony had been very forthcoming about that the entire time. That is an inaccurate statement that the Sun Sentinel published. I've done my homework. Have you? I live to do it. So, and he did not withhold it from anybody, not Coral Springs or anybody. So ridiculous. They don't like Sheriff Tony because Sheriff Tony is a DeSantis pick. They don't like Sheriff Tony because Sheriff Tony's in with Ron DeSantis. It has to do with Ron DeSantis. Florida Sun Sentinel doesn't give a rat's ass about anybody in Broward because their sole focus is on Ron DeSantis. Now, how do you call that a newspaper? Do you feel served by that publication? They're as much of a newspaper as Scott Israel was ever a real sheriff. Sheriff Tony's been doing a great job, and he's had the support of the community and the other officers there. But Scott Israel can be used as a cudgel against Ron DeSantis. I've gotten emails before from, and sometimes, I don't know if it's from Scott Israel or not, somebody who said he was his son had reached out to me before. And like a couple of times I've gotten emails from people who said that they, that, you know, oh, he wants to talk to you or something like that. Oh, no, no, no. No, you had the chance to talk with me when we sat on stage and you blamed me for your incompetency. You had the chance to talk to me when I introduced myself. I found you out and I introduced myself to you, coward, backstage when we were at that town hall. And you were very thrown off by that. And you showed me your cards right away. I read you like an open book. No, if I had done your job, that never would have happened. And if I had done your job, I wouldn't be such an emasculated disgrace to the badge that I would have sat on stage and blamed a woman, a mother in Dallas, for my failures. Anytime Scott Israel wants to produce the beans to come on this show, I'm your Huckleberry. This guy thinks that he's going to try to clamor over the bodies of people whose incompetency he helped to murder. When you get 39 calls, how are you not responding to that? When students are telling your department that they have death threats against them, how are you not responding to that? When over the course of years, there were dozens of visits from your department to this dude's house, how are you not remembering that? So Florida Sun Sentinel has showed everybody where they're at. Anybody who's against Ron DeSantis, no matter how lowly or disgraced, they're with that person in the name of media. Oh, we'll be following this story. You can bet. And this is just the beginning of what you're going to hear from me right now on this. Now, we have a lot of other things to hit as well. We have Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, who's going to be joining us later on. We're also going to get into Drew Holden has a great thread on legacy media that I have to share with you. And get this, a Fordham student is on campus probation because he for an Instagram photo of the Tiananmen Square massacre. This is crazy. He was punished for holding a gun in an Instagram photo, and he was lawfully holding it, nothing weird, memorializing the Tiananmen Square incident. And he immigrated from China, and he was forced to write an apology letter for the post that memorialized the anniversary. Wow, unbelievable. Wait until the Foundation for Individual Rights and Education is apparently taking his situation up. We'll have more on that coming up as well. And we have Mailbag of Hate. later on. We'll open up some phone lines here shortly. What makes Patriot Mobile different? It's their exceptional customer satisfaction. It's because they listen to your needs and share the same values. As America's only Christian conservative wireless service provider, Patriot Mobile is committed to supporting organizations fighting for religious freedom, First and Second Amendments, sanctity of life, and the needs of veterans and first responders by donating a portion of every dollar to the causes you believe in. And now, with the broadcast coverage of any provider on dependable nationwide 4G LTE networks, all Patriot Mobile plans include unlimited talk and data with high-value commitment-free plans to fit any budget. Call the U.S.-based team at 972-PATRIOT or visit patriotmobile.com/Dana. Use promo code Dana for free activation, multi-line discounts, veteran and first responder discounts, and up to $600 in referral bonus dollars. Make the switch today to Patriot Mobile. Call 972-PATRIOT or visit patriotmobile.com/Dana. That's 972-PATRIOT or patriotmobile.com/Dana. Patriot Mobile, mobilizing conservatives.
A higher caliber of talk. Get Dana on demand through iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
Progressives like Mark Zuckerberg again after he tells Dr. Fauci that he thinks that the United States is significantly worse in dealing with the pandemic than the rest of the world, and he criticizes the administration for, quote, undermining science. So they're going to probably pause their persecution of Facebook for a moment because they allow Trump ads because they like what he just said. Oh, boy. Look at the brain trust over here. Iranian spies accidentally leak video of themselves showing how to hack and steal data from email accounts. Gosh, they're like, hacker man, look at you. Video of Iranian-backed hackers. They're training other hackers, and it was accidentally uploaded. And it shows all of them combing through email accounts and copying data. The footage was spotted by IBM's X4 security team. They shared it with Wired. And that's one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. Why would you do this? How clueless are you? So, police are hunting a bank robber who slipped a teller a note saying that he was going to open fire if she didn't give him money because he lost his business to the pandemic and didn't get any aid. This was in Houston, Texas. The robber also claimed in the note that he'd lost his business. He said that he needs to get his money or he's going to open fire. And it was the Wood Forest National Bank earlier this month. He got away with an undisclosed sum of cash. Houston cops released images of the note and the suspect, and they've reached out to the public for help in finding the suspect. The heist occurred on July 8th. And of course, now Gavin Newsom is getting sued by three churches after he banned singing in places of worship because of the coronavirus. This is absolutely a First Amendment issue. And it was made very clear, one of the attorneys filing suit told the Sacramento Bee, quote, let me be clear, the state does not have the jurisdiction to ban houses of worship from singing praise. They're facing a number of lawsuits on this. This is just with the First Amendment issue from three churches. Real life wedding crashers reveal how they sneak into lavish events to enjoy the free booze and babes. And the world's greatest party crasher, self-titled, shares his tips to avoid being detected. He is a 70-year-old former politician. He's gate crashed two Academy Awards also. That's unbelievable. So he likes to have a solid backstory. He says that's important, and to wear proper wedding attire and spend the night checking out the work of the caterers and all of that. And it's just funny. It's just, I mean, yes, don't do that. It's so D-class A. But the fact that there's a 70-year-old dude like doing this, like out there, like crashing weddings. He's like from Wedding Crashers, Will Ferrell's character. I wonder if he lives with his mom. Stick with us. We have Georgia Governor Brian Kemp joining us next.
This portion of The Dana Show is brought to you by Caltech. They don't make ordinary firearms. They invent better ones. Innovation. Performance. Caltech. Visit us at caltechweapons.com.
They want us to break our backs and not get paid and step away from what we do. And we're not going to do that. You know, like, unfortunately, there's no really good leadership on in either of the parties, including the Republican Party. I feel like right now the only one who's using any type of common sense is President Trump and his White House staff. And unfortunately for us, you know, he's not around here, so we're gonna maintain and stay open.
Well, that's a business owner, a barbershop owner in California, who was speaking out. He needs to reopen his business, needs to be able to generate an income on which to live. And of course, there he was discussing the president and the president's perspective in all of this. Welcome back to the program. I'm Dana Lash, DanaLash.com. Joining me right now from the beautiful state of Georgia, Governor Brian Kemp, who is in, the only way that I think I can call it is like a mask war. We've seen these happen across the country. We've seen it happen here in my state of Texas, and we've seen it happen elsewhere. And Brian Kemp, who has been he's been criticized by the media because he's a Republican, and he's been cheered by a lot of people who have common sense and who appreciate that there is a governor that is that sees the importance of allowing the individuals who are grown adults to make determinations about what they wear or do not wear on their face. But he is in a fight right now with Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms on masks, on the required wearing of masks. This, among some other things, he joins us to discuss. Governor, good afternoon to you, and welcome to the show. Thank you for your time today.
Great to be here with you, Dana. Thanks so much. I'd just like to take a minute, if you'll give me one, just to really tell people what's going on down here in Georgia. We're working hard to protect lives, but also livelihoods in our great state. However, we have some of our local politicians that are playing pandemic politics, and they're wanting us to go back into shelter in place. They want to close indoor dining. And that conflicts with my statewide order that I've had out there for weeks and weeks now. And so we've filed a lawsuit to stop them. We're standing up for hardworking Georgians.
Yeah, and hardworking Georgians, from what I hear, really do appreciate that. And the mask order and the insistence on the shutdown, I'm still trying to figure out on what science they are basing these demands, because, you know, when I look at, and I've been following testing in the state of Georgia and the positivity rates and fatality rates. And one thing that really struck me, Governor, and we're speaking with Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia, is that, you know, for instance, the attention that swirls around your administration of the state during this time of pandemic is quite different from how I've seen other things reported. I know Colorado, Jared Polis, has been really celebrated in media for doing a great job. But as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Governor, Georgia per capita was administering more tests and your rates were somewhat similar. And Georgia really was one of the first states to really get all of this under control and get on the other side of that so-called curve, flatten it quicker, and reduce fatalities. Tell me about this, because I feel as though the partisan coverage of this is preventing people from hearing what you did that worked in your state.
Well, it's really kind of sad. You know, we opened back toward the end of April to reopen our economy and to really fight two battles. You know, we've been fighting a battle against COVID, and I agree with all the guidance that's out there on social distancing, washing your hands, wear a mask to protect people, and all of those type things. But, you know, we also have to protect our livelihoods. And the way the economy dropped off, I mean, we can't continue that as a country. We're in no, you know, nothing like what we were seeing, you know, several months ago. It's been 82 days since we reopened our economy here in Georgia, Dana. And this, you know, this new wave of the virus we're seeing across the South and on the West Coast and then some other places, I mean, we're dealing with it. You know, we have been planning for months for hospital surge capacity. We've ramped up our testing. I said this morning we've got to do more because of what we're seeing right now. But we're holding our own and we're fighting hard. But to have local mayors that are going to circumvent common sense orders and guidance that was working, it worked before, it'll work again. We don't need to do more than that. We need to follow the advice and the guidance that's already out there. But to simply start jerking the rug out from under, you know, dine-in restaurants and, you know, telling people to shelter in place, I mean, that hurts small business people. It hurts working Georgians. It's going to hurt our tax dollars and collections and our revenue, which in turn hurts all the programs that you need in a crisis like this, whether it's health care, public safety, as we've seen. I know you've been following the public safety story in the city of Atlanta as well. We've had to call in the National Guard to help protect the citizens there. Because of just lawlessness in the city. And, you know, when those kind of things happen or when somebody's going to start, you know, shutting businesses down, I'm just not going to stand idly by and let that happen. We have too much at stake here in our state.
Absolutely. Not just in Georgia, but elsewhere across the country. What do you say to those individuals out there who allege that, you know, these any kind of spike that they see, it's the direct result of the reopening, the way that governors and leaders in different localities reopen, as opposed to like the protest and then the riots, where I didn't see a lot of people wearing masks and I definitely didn't see social distancing. I have, however, seen some charts that show a very interesting spike 14 days after some of these riots began. What do you, if you had to attribute any kind of increase to something, what do you say to those who insist that it's the reopening?
Well, you know, the national media keeps saying that, and that's just quite honestly fake news. It really is. I mean, we've been open for 82 days. You know, these cases, you watch the numbers 2 weeks out, 3 weeks out. All the experts have said, well, if you do something today, you'll see the effects of it in 2 to 3 weeks. Well, it's been over 2 months now here in Georgia. Our cases continue to decline after we reopen. I mean, we had issues like everybody else did, but we're doing the things we needed to do to keep it under control. But if you look, something really happened, and I think there's several events that have attributed to that. Number one was the protest. We didn't see a whole lot of new cases from the protest, but what I think did happen, it sent the messaging of when that was happening, then, well, it's all over. We can allow large gatherings. We don't have to worry about social distancing anymore. And people weren't enforcing the orders, especially in places like Atlanta and other spots around the state. But, you know, you can see that spike start to happen in that same time frame that you just mentioned. But the other thing is Memorial Day, I mean, Americans went through a lot. We asked them to do a lot to help us build hospital capacity, and many people sheltered in places in some ways. We didn't do quite as much of that in Georgia's other states, but, I mean, every state's different, and I respect that of the governors. But people let their hair down after Memorial Day. I think they did on July 4th as well, because we didn't see a lot of cases, and people quit following the advice and the guidelines. And now we got to get back and hunker down again and follow that guidance to flatten the curve before. And I think, you know, really all of those things have attributed to that.
Yeah, and it's good to see, and it's good to see so many areas reopening. And as you said, you know, if you just, it's just common sense and following, you know, some the hand washing, which I'm kind of worried that maybe not everybody was washing their hands when I hear how people have to be shown how to do it. I want to get your thoughts really quickly on something obviously that is related to Georgia, and particularly businesses in Georgia, because the economic fallout of these lockdowns can have just as disastrous an effect as health-wise, not just even economically. But one of the things that the Senate is doing is they're trying to implement legislation that would protect these businesses, small businesses in particular, from liability temporarily during this pandemic era. If you tell me your thoughts on that, and if you could have the perfect, you know, liability protection for businesses so that they could open comfortably without living in fear of losing everything if there's a spike or something else out there, and individuals being able to exercise their freedom and go out if they want to and patronize a business if they want to. In your perfect case scenario, what does that look like?
Well, we actually passed a bill in Georgia this year that we're doing the bill review on now, that I hope to be signing very soon, as long as there's no issues with it from a, you know, constitutional mm-hmm. standpoint, which I don't think there will be. But I think the protections are needed. You know, we were talking about that this morning when we were talking about the Georgia bill, and there's homeowners associations that haven't opened their pools yet because they're worried about the liability wow. from COVID. And you know, it's unfortunate that we're in a place like that in our country, but I would certainly encourage the Congress to act on that. And, you know, I think it's well needed. It's, you know, I have in my executive orders protections for our healthcare workers and long-term care facilities and many people that are on the front lines of the virus that are having to make tough decisions in an environment, especially several months ago, they had no idea really what they were dealing with. And, you know, the treatments have certainly gotten better, and we're seeing that our hospitalization stays are shorter, and that's really helped us.
Yeah, that's great news indeed. The severity of the cases seems obviously compared to right when all of this started less severe, and as you just mentioned, the hospital stays as well. Last question for you. We're talking to Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia. You encourage people to wear masks, but it is not a mandate. You're leaving it up to each individual because they're grown adults. They don't need Governor Kemp getting into their lives and telling them what to do every single day. I like your approach to this. What final word for you, Governor?
Well, Well, like I said, you know, we don't need a mandate in Georgia for people to do the right thing. You know, most people are following the guidance. Some of those that just absolutely don't want to do it, I understand that from a liberty and freedom perspective. It's what our country was built on, and I'm asking those folks, if that's the case, just, you know, socially distance yourself from people and be careful about where you're going when. You know, if you're sick, stay home. And just help us flatten the curve so we can get back to some of the liberties that we all enjoy this fall, like college football games and,
you know,
getting our kids back in school and continuing to get our economy going. We have got to do that, Dana. I mean, it's going to be disastrous for our country and for our state if we don't continue to do that. And we've been very fortunate in Georgia. I mean, we're in a tough spot like everyone else, but our unemployment rate this morning was 7.5%. Where California's is 17.5%, and
yes.
I think it's because, you know, we've been very methodical and acting on the public health advice of Dr. Kathleen Toomey, but we've also been reasonable, knowing that, you know, government can't ask people to stay home, sit in their living room while they lose their business, not be able to feed their family. They're just not going to do that. So we have to have policies that people can believe in, and I believe that's what we've done here in Georgia.
Amen to that. And you've had some really good health experts around you as well. You mentioned Dr. Toomey, who just a stellar background. And really, Governor Kemp, I have to say, I've heard from so many people, some in our Georgia audience and elsewhere, who think that the way that you've approached this is really should be kind of the model for the nation. So thank you so much for giving that example, and hopefully other governors will follow. Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia, God bless you, sir. Thank you so much for your time today, and prayers and best wishes for Georgia's trajectory back to normalcy.
Hey, amen to that. Thanks, Dana. God bless.
Of course. God bless you. Take care. Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia. And yeah, that is the way that they have done it. And he mentioned Dr. Kathleen Toomey, who celebrated doctor and has been, I guess she's like his Fauci, you could say, but without some of the controversy, I think, and some of that stuff. But they've been following very closely the reported cases. And one of the things I like about, I have to say this, I like when I've been seeing numbers come out of Georgia, what I have seen, they also put that in the context of fatality rates and severity, et cetera. So you actually get a full, clear picture of what they're basing their decisions on, whereas it seems like other people are just, okay, these are our positive cases, and they don't tell you anything else about it, because you need those other variables to give a full perspective. We have more to come, and we also have Florida Man on the way and some Today in Stupidity.
Delivering the truth online and on air. Listen to The Dana Show live on the radio or at danaradio.com or on demand.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
I think y'all need to be careful with some of these women that you get involved with. Well, a Florida man was an unhappy victim because his Florida lady tore skin from his copulatory area during a domestic dispute. Do you like that copulatory area?
Tore?
A lot of kids Googling words today.
Tore.
Like, there's not any kind of, like, you know, Southern Missouri slang on that to make it a different word. It's like T-O-R-E, tore. A Florida woman was hit with a felony charge after she grabbed her boyfriend's jimmies with such force, oh my gosh, that it removed the skin from the entirety of the right jimmy.
Nuh-uh.
Yes.
No.
According to the arrest affidavit filed in Pinellas County, Donika Mays and her partner, they have a two-year-old child together. They got in a verbal altercation. The moment Mays slashed the tires on his car is when that man needed to know he needs to run. But he left the house to wait for a tow truck, and then it got physical because he didn't run. Mays followed him outside, demanded that he hand over a cell phone. And when he refused, she pulled at the groin with enough force to remove flesh. Now, I'm made of questions, like, was he wearing pants, number one? And she's smiling in her mugshot. She's just smiling. Was he wearing pants? I don't know, but she, like, was beating him up. And he was clothed. It says clothed. Okay, boxer? I don't know, because I can't imagine that's done with jeans.
I know.
And if it is, she's like a raptor. Girlfriend is a raptor. She was arrested and booked into the county jail as a smoking gun, where she's being held in lieu of a $7,650 bond. She's got battery. She's also charged with providing cops with a fake name. She's not allowed to have contact with the victim. And apparently she violated probation because she had a prior battery case. She attacked a different man that time. She will beat you up the moment she slashes. I'm telling you what, gentlemen out there, when a woman slashes your tires, if a woman slashes your tires, she will cut you. And she has like crazy strength. You know how some people can have old man strength? Mm-hmm. Chicks, crazy can give chicks strength. Yep. You will be shocked. True. I'm telling you. And last but not least, a nude Florida man spent the whole day destroying a Florida school. Miramar Excessive School. It was on Memorial Day. A naked Florida man spent all day destroying it. Seriously? Stay with us.
We now have fewer people in our jails than any time since World War II. And we are safer for it and better for it.
Because we let them all out.
Safer?
We're safer for it because we let them go. Do you see how this works? And then, like, two people.
Staffers.
Yeah, they're staffers. Probably one of the claps that you heard was his feet. Or just a bunch of groundhogs he's dropping. Welcome to the show. I'm Dana Lash at DLash on Twitter, official Dana Lash on Facebook, Channel 248 Pluto TV via The First. And goodness. Where else? DanaLash.com, at DLash Twitter, but Dana Lash on Parler too. Go and find me. You should actually have an account there if you do not already. All right, so Law and Order. I don't know if you... Well, I hope that you read this over at DanaLash.com. St. Louis Public Safety Director, Judge Jimmy Edwards, blasted protesters and violent rioters. And this is like one of the most powerful, you need to listen, his words are powerful, particularly at the end, because he is imploring people who are standing there. He's trying to put it all in perspective. I want you to listen to this. This is the St. Louis Public Safety Director, Judge Jimmy Edwards. Listen to what he says here.
We have to address this issue. Black-on-black crime, we run away from it like it doesn't happen. All of the protests from 2014, from Mike Brown to Stockley to the day, all of those protests have been south to Del Mar. If you big, bad, and bold enough, let's walk down Goodfellow and Dr. Martin Luther King. And let's walk to Natural Bridge. Let's walk east on Natural Bridge to Fairground. Let's do an encampment at Kossuth and Grant. Stop protesting these fake issues and let's start addressing the things that we need to address. The mayor's not going to resign. Why do I have 75, 100 people out here talking about resign later? And they're coming from Baldwin and Kirkwood and Richmond Heights and South County and Northern California and Illinois. They don't even live in the city of St. Louis. They are creating issues to protest about, disguised as peaceful protests, and they're engaging in criminal activity. And you know what? Those kids that's been down here protesting, I want them out of the city. They need to go home. They need to go back where they come from. We don't want them down here anymore. We got other issues that we need to address.
Oh, check this out.
I got real issues that we need to address. And the heck of a thing about it, most of you know who killed your loved ones. Most of you know who killed your loved ones, but I can't even get witnesses to stand up.
Ooh.
I can't get witnesses to stand up and point a finger and say he did it. I got to fix this. And I hope you stand with me and understand what's going on in our city. Know when you are being hoodwinked and know when you're not.
I spy a future mayor here. That's by a future mayor. Dang, I would cheat to vote for him after that speech. Jimmy Edwards from St. Louis. I went and I was looking up his background record and everything last night. And, you know, some people are... I want you to think outside the box for a moment with me. In our current politically tribal era, people would look at him and be like, well, he's a Democrat. He was picked by Lyda Crewson, who's the mayor in St. Louis. She's a Democrat. He knows Democrats. Democrats, it's just going to be the same stuff. He's a little different, though. He's different in a number of ways. He comes, and I mean, I went back and looked. He was in the 22nd Circuit Court. He was the administrative judge for family court, and he was chief judge for the juvenile court. He's got a history of working with youth. And the way that he has approached it, and I've been reading years of stories on him last night. I always do research on people. He has always approached it from a perspective of de-escalation and finding middle ground. De-escalation and finding middle ground. That's incredibly important. You're not going to have left-leaning cities listening to Republicans. Now, you'll have left-leaning cities listen to someone who might be also a Democrat, but has enough of a record, a pedigree of effort that they can legitimately and authoritatively say, everybody needs to stop and listen here. This is wrong, and this is how we can fix it. And notice in his remarks, the other thing that he did that's different from a lot of other people that I've heard in St. Louis, my hometown, but I think that this is, I'm bringing this up because this is applicable everywhere. He didn't just say, this is what's wrong, and that's it. This was Tuesday morning when he made these remarks, and he waited patiently there, got his chance at the bullhorn, and he didn't just say, this is what's wrong. He also said, okay, this is what we need to do to fix it. That last part, when he said the heck of a thing about it, is most of you know who killed your loved ones. Most of you know who killed them, but I can't even get a witness to stand up. I can't get witnesses to stand up and point a finger and say he did it. I got to fix this. I hope you stand with me. That was powerful. And you could hear people going, oh. Like they had, like, oh, he's talking to me. He's talking to the city. This, he is so different from what I've seen of Crewson and others. And if I have to give Crewson a compliment, I would say it would be that this guy, it was the St. Louis Public Safety Director. I want to see Jimmy Edwards run for mayor. I want to see him run for mayor. I think he's got the temperament. I think he's got the common sense for it. And in lieu of the perfect Republican showing up or a perfect Libertarian, they can't stop fighting with each other, and or independent candidate, I want him. Heck, he seems to be more independent than some of the independents out there. But that was powerful. And this is what you need in order to solve these problems. And the thing is that, you know, this whole, I was talking about the urban renewal and all of that yesterday with Asheville. He's, you know, he tells people, look, you know someone who's doing this and nobody will tell on anyone. That's got to stop. And I think people are kind of starting to realize, too, in a number of these cities where you have had, you know, these stronghold policies, I think people are starting to wake up to the fact that, well, we've been voting the same way and doing the same things over and over again, and we haven't gotten anything different for our vote. You can read the transcript of this and watch and listen to the audio up at danalash.com. I have it up there. But I will say this too. I mean, he has repeatedly and consistently called out rioters. And I made mention in the piece up at the site that he has echoed previously, because you remember Captain Ron Johnson of Missouri State Highway Patrol, 2014, when all the riots were happening in Ferguson. He noted he was one of the first people who was listening, because remember how I said Black Lives Matter was hijacked in St. Louis? Oh, that's a fact. I have a link in there that explains it. Talks about that Missourians organizing for or something on reform more. That's what ACORN became. ACORN didn't disband. They renamed themselves. And they were paying people to protest, and not apparently not all of them were from St. Louis. And Ron Johnson was saying, yeah, there are a lot of people now from St. Louis coming on here from Chicago and elsewhere causing trouble because it's organized. But they want you to think it's all local people. Now, I'm not saying local people aren't involved in destruction. Oh, please, come on. But I am also not saying that that is not exploited and it is not intensified by people bringing people in to help with it. Big difference. You can go to danalash.com for that. Now, several other things. I got to tell you about this. This student over at Fordham, immigrated from China, was forced to write an apology letter because of an Instagram post. Austin Tong posted to his Instagram account a photo of David Dorn, who was the retired St. Louis police captain who was murdered by rioters following when St. Louis went to through 2 days of fire and brimstone there, and then Kim Gardner let everybody out of jail. And the photo included the caption, y'all a bunch of hypocrites, a reference to Tong's frustration. And he said that there was like a nonchalant reaction over Dorn's death. And then the next day on June 4th was the 31st anniversary of Tiananmen Square. And he posed for a photo holding a legally obtained, it was a legal rifle. He was not on campus, and it just had the caption, "Don't tread on me." That was it. And it included an American flag emoji, a Chinese flag emoji, and a hashtag that is commonly used by Chinese citizens to avoid censorship of online discussion whenever they mention Tiananmen Square. Fordham wrote to Tong on June 8th when the dean of students, Keith Eldridge, informed him that he was under investigation by the university for the two photos. And Tuesday of this week, Fordham handed down its verdict. He was found guilty of violating university policies on bias and or hate crimes and threat / intimidation. What? Program officer Lindsay Rank, who's the author of one of the letters to Fordham, and it's FIRE, which is a group that works with students in that, said when Tong immigrated to the United States from China at 6 years old, his family sought to ensure that he would be protected by the rights guaranteed by their new home, including freedom of speech and the right to bear arms. And they said here, however, Fordham's acting more like the Chinese government than an American university. So Tong's probation, he cannot physically visit the campus without approval. He cannot take leadership roles in any student organizations. He cannot participate in athletics. And he's required to complete implicit bias training and write an apology letter. Now, Fordham is private, but they are still bound to freedom of expression. That is, and apparently they are horrible for free speech. That is unbelievable. I've seen the photos. And it was a little bitty tiny gun. He's just standing there with, and he's just saying, "Don't tread on me." He's exercising his 2A rights. Nothing he said was, a disagreement is not bias. Disagreement, simple disagreement is not intimidation. Simple disagreement is not a threat. And it's not violence either. People who believe that they have no obligation to ever be challenged. There are people who think that they are entitled to have their opinion only exist in the public square. They try to shut down dissent by targeting and abusing authority and fascistically as a way to shut up any challenges and any dissent. They're the bullies. They should be writing the apology letter. I mean, this is just unbelievable. So we'll follow that. But I hope that he pushes back on that. He ought to. Hell, I'd go to a new university. So coming up, basketball coaches call for an end, college basketball coaches. They want the ACT and SAT requirement to go away, says the Wall Street Journal. They say that the tests hurt minority students. The lowered bar of expectation, lowering that bar, that's racism. To believe that other students, because they are minorities or because they are poor, which is not synonymous with minorities, racist, that somehow they can't meet the same challenges that other students, it's unbelievable. We've got that for you as well. And we'll get into some, I don't really have a lot of hate mail. People haven't been sending as much since I monetized it. So I need to pretend to not monetize it, maybe, so I can get more.
Head to danaradio.com for the latest videos, blog posts, and podcasts.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Kel-Tec.
I actually just realized that I like messed up my headline segments. I did this hour's last hour. So now I'm going to do last hour's this hour. The three men, remember, who shot the father while he was holding his seven-year-old daughter's hand when they were crossing the street. This is so bad. Three men were arrested. They have been charged with murder. Justice is happening. Devon Delks, 21, Laquan Hayward, and Devon Vines, 27, for the murder of 29-year-old Anthony Robinson. He was shot in the chest while crossing the street in the Bronx with his daughter on the evening of July 5th. And Robinson's daughter managed, thankfully, to escape unharmed. Right there, he's holding his daughter's hand. They shoot him. These guys, they're going away for a long time, hopefully. That's just awful, awful. And also, sunscreen chemicals apparently accumulate in the body at high levels. This according to the Wall Street Journal and the FDA. They said that if it's they can actually have really adverse side effects, like increasing the risk of cancer, birth defects. I mean, hi. I think there's sometimes too much is too much, right? Increasing the risk of cancer, sunscreen. Gosh dang. See, it's always... A shark pulled a 10-year-old from a fishing boat. Whoa. This is like, a 10-year-old boy off Australia on Friday. But it swam off because his dad jumped in to save him. He was taken to the hospital in stable condition with cuts to his arm, chest, and head. And it was off of Tasmania. He was wearing a life vest, thankfully. The shark literally grabbed him from the boat. And just last week, a 15-year-old surfer was killed off the country's eastern coast. So you're not even safe in the boat. Man, I'm telling you, Australia, nature will just rise from the ground and punch you. Stick with us.
Missed anything from the show? Subscribe to Dana's Daily Podcast by subscribing on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever podcasts are available.
Our morale has never been lower. I think it speaks volumes for the cops who still come to this city every day and still put it all on the line every day, because let's be honest, we signed up for this job and we know that death could result in what we do. We know that. But when you have the people, the very people that you are giving your life for to protect, turn on you and make you feel like you're on your own, it wasn't enough to just get disciplined, you know? It wasn't enough to possibly get suspended or fired. We are put in a position right now where every Minneapolis cop feels that they're the next incident. They're scared to death to answer calls in case something turns violent, because they're actively trying to send us to prison. Cops are scared of dying, and they're scared of going to prison.
That's true. That's a Minneapolis police officer, and he's 1,000% correct. So I feel so bad for our officers. I really do. DanaLash.com. I was, have you seen these stories? And I saw, let me pull this up. I saw one, like I've been seeing video of it too. And I posted one in Slack. There are, like, for instance, in Portland, the police department, they pulled up, I'm looking at this video, they pulled up and these people are not protesting. You have people who are rioting and people who are in the middle of the streets and trying to intimidate drivers. And like, for instance, this one video shows a police van. It's just a white van, unmarked, but it has a light on it. And you have this one dude on a bike, and all of a sudden the police come out and they grab him. And he was apparently, it was an Antifa guy who was apparently detained because he was in a prohibited area after he was warned reportedly to disperse. And there's some videos of this. And I'm looking at some of these others, like Fox 12 Oregon says, protesters question federal law enforcement snatch and grab tactics in Portland. And apparently Homeland Security Director Chad Wolf was saying that they were going to protect federal facilities and those inside. And now some of the protesters, they're questioning the tactics. And they said that they're getting us even when things are peaceful and nothing's happening. Are they, though? I mean, part of me is like, yeah. And then the other part of me is like, I just have one little question. I do have one question. I just one. Maybe more than one. But because I'm a free speech purist. Although I don't think that Antifa in Portland, y'all have shown that you're burning stuff up, busting stuff up. You guys have been causing problems. And I've seen some people say, oh, no, this is these tactics are trying to eliminate accountability. Wait, what? First off, I don't know. DHS hasn't act. Have they said that they're doing this? Because I haven't seen any. Actually, I haven't seen any explicit confirmation that some of the stuff in the video is all them or that it's not. I mean, they haven't denied it. And when you look at Acting Secretary Chad Wolf on Twitter, he's posting photos of certain things of police and then some folks in camouflage. And he had said that he had offered DHS help or support to help locally address the situation in Portland. And their only response was, please pack up and go home. It's not going to happen on my watch, he says. And I don't know. Why wouldn't they, if they're federal agents, I do have a question. Why are they dressed in like, why wouldn't they just be in federal agent wear? I'm just curious. Does it?
I would imagine because they've proven in the past to be violent. They got to be a little more tactical with it.
You think?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Why not better safe than sorry when you're in their position?
Yeah, well, I understand that. But I don't know. I think I need to. I want to see more of this. I want to see more video. I mean, I have seen some videos, but I want to see just a little bit more before I. But at the same time, haven't police and other elected officials say, hey, look, if you're going to burn stuff down and you're going to assault people and beat people in the streets, this is going to be the response. I mean, they did say that, did they not?
They did.
I can't really take seriously criticisms or even questions seriously from people who had no problem with Antifa raising hell and burning stuff down and targeting people and persecuting people and all this other garbage. And you know, Nancy Pelosi, well, some people will do that whenever statues are brought up. But this, oh no, now we're going to speak out about this. Well, if you believe that this is a compromise, let's just play out worst case scenario here for a moment for the sake of discussion, because there's a point to it. If the point of critique or disagreement with this is that you feel that you are that somehow expression, if they're peaceful protesters or if they're not, that it's being compromised, then why didn't those same people say that of the violent rioters who were also compromising free speech with their violent actions? Because that wasn't said either, and that is also a threat to liberty. Why wasn't that brought up? And I feel that both points can, you, I mean, if there are serious examples of this, you know, you can have, I mean, both points can be fair, but I'm just curious about this. I've seen, I'm like looking at a bunch of different video that I have on stuff on it. But yeah, these apparently, I guess, there twice in the past couple of months, there have been people in, you know, like fatigues in America's streets. And some of them, though, have the DHS or they'll have like their department patches on their sleeves. Like they have like identifying patches. And sometimes it'll just be like what one thing that we saw with Portland PD, they were just in their anti-riot gear. But people are pointing that, you know, the agency vehicles that they're using are unmarked vans or unmarked vehicles, and that they don't exactly know who they are or where they are when they arrive. But that's the thing, though. I mean, are they detaining people who are near federal property? Because that's the whole point of these guys apparently being out there, is that they're protecting federal buildings or protecting federal areas. And apparently, like, the dude on the bike was near a federal building and he had been told to disperse and apparently wasn't going to listen to it. I'm not going to, you got to be careful who you trust in these situations when you start reading news on it, because a lot of these entities that are going to be reporting on this are entities that also downplayed the actual real violence and threat of Antifa. I mean, keep in mind, you had Antifa up there in the Northeast was it in Washington? Was it like part of one of the Seattle camps that they were going to blow up an ICE detention facility and he engaged in a shootout? And they've said it's a revolution and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And they've like been like physically threatening. So you got to be careful what entity you believe, because some entities out there, media entities, have been running defense for terrorists. And Antifa is a terrorist organization, as so designated. It's a fascist organization. They get so mad when you say that, but they are. Just because you call yourself anti doesn't mean that you're actually anti-fascist. When you are using violence to intimidate people from their speech, that's fascism. That's a tenet of fascism. But I'm going to continue keeping. I'm curious about them. Keeping an eye on that. All right. So Wall Street Journal says college basketball coaches are calling for an end to the ACT-SAT requirement. The nation's leading men's college basketball coaches association has called the SAT and ACT, quote, longstanding forces of institutional racism, and they want them eliminated from use in determining the athlete's eligibility. Now, the the National Association of Basketball Coaches, the NABC, they made the move 3 days. They have their first black executive director. This is what Wall Street Journal is writing. Division I coach Craig Robinson. And they had just formed a committee on racial reconciliation. So I don't... I'm made of questions. Why is it racist? Why would ending this... what else are we going to remove in terms of requirements for scholarships? I mean, I understand that there are some universities that make a lot of money from their sports programs, but I don't know. Why just for basketball players? When you couch it like that, it just makes me question, okay, this is just you trying to get around eligibility, you know, academic eligibility. Mm-hmm. That's all this is. If it's not something that people are demanding across the board, I got questions. Goodness. What's the point? Like, what else? I mean, why don't you just act like, okay, you know what? We're just going to come out and say it. This is actually not about academics at all. We just want to get you into play basketball and that's it. Well, at that point, hell, why even bother with it? Go to the NBA. Yeah. Steve, you like college ball, don't you? Do you watch college basketball?
Yeah, I do.
Do you think that we should eliminate ACT and SAT? Only for college athletes, though. Which, by the way, that seems like really inherently bigoted if they're saying that it's racial but I don't know. To me, it sounds like they're just saying we don't care about anything else. This is just a funnel for sports, for us to get money. Is that it?
There's got to be some Title IX problems here because you can't just do that for men's basketball. Or I don't know if it's men's and women's or just men's, but it seems like it seems like there's some Title IX. A lot of the players out of high school are just going straight to the G League, and they're not even going to NCAA because it's easier to get to the NBA that way. And it's not, there's like so many red tape things I have to go through.
Yeah. See, like that seems like the easiest thing to do without. But then the more that athletes do that, the more it hurts college teams. And then that's a whole institution. That's a whole industry right there. That's really what this is. They want to protect industry. I don't know. I just like, what else are we going to end requirements for? You know what? You don't have to be able to actually drive to get your driver's license. I mean, just if you know what a car is and can point to it, like that's a car and that is a shoe. I mean, you got your license. But the thing is, I'm just waiting for somebody to come out and be like, is this not also racist to say that, oh, well, if you are a minority and we're going to lower this bar of expectation because you're a minority, well, that's just simply saying we think you're too dumb to meet the expectation, so we're going to lower it. Like, nobody's challenging them on this. If you want to, this is institutional, this is systemic leftism. No one is challenging them on this. Good heavens. I don't know, the whole thing, it seems insane. It's insane. And I'm offended, and it's not even me.
Well, it's perpetuating the whole narrative.
We're the parents to get offended over this.
It's perpetuating the narrative that you don't need, if you're an athlete, you don't need the education. And I think that's...
Like, what if you get an injury in college, though?
Right, that's what I mean. I think that's a bad message to send.
It's a horrible message to send. You got to have a plan B.
I'm looking at the top basketball recruits for this year coming out of high school, mm-hmm. and number two and number four are both skipping college. And you have to do 3 years now, and they're skipping out entirely.
Hmm. So when you go and play ball in college, you have to, 3 years. You give them 3 years.
That's the NCAA rule. Oh no, it's 1 year in basketball, 3 years in football. But they're just going straight from high school to the G League.
Dang, that seems smarter. Honestly, seems way smarter. 3 years for football. Man, when you can get injured too. I don't know. I'll tell you. All right. I know we got to get going because I just now looked at the clock and I was like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I'm going to try to be able to see if we can squeeze some hate mail in around the bend, but we'll see.
Follow Dana on Twitter at D Lash and official Dana Lash on Facebook.
I am so happy it's Friday. And I also don't know why people are getting all up in James Harden's face. So Houston Rockets tweeted a thing, said mask up. And it was James Harden, and he's got a mask on, and it's like blue and black and white, and it's like it's the thin blue line flag. It's the thing that support, you know. And he was asked about it because the press is going to be morons. And he goes, it was just something that covered my whole beard. I thought it looked cool. That was it. And ESPN says, Harden says he's in the process of determining how he will voice his support for Black Lives Matter while in the NBA bubble, including whether or not he'll have a... Shut up. Quit aggravating the man. Jeez.
Why do we keep doing this?
Somebody goes, there's no way he remembered a mask for the trip. He probably stopped at a gas station on the way to the bubble.
Exactly.
It's probably what he did. I mean, it's not everybody. I just can't even. Like somebody goes, that was so it was disturbing to see a professional athlete support police. Like, I barely slept last night at the thought of him doing it. Shut up.
A basketball themed show.
Right.
So it's not they don't care if the mask is effective or not effective. They only care what's on the mask. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I got it. All right then.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, can people leave him alone? Can they leave him alone?
I don't think so in this day and age.
Also, like, is there anybody out there who maybe he does support BLM, but so you can't do that and also support police? It has to be one or the other because Nuance is dead? Is that it? Mm-hmm. Good night. I just, not everybody with everything that they do is making a political statement. How bad must it be for athletes? You got to be terrified of what you're going to wear. Mm-hmm. What if there's like some blue shorts you like? Blue is the color of police. How dare you wear that? And then you have like some annoying pencil necked advocate reporter out there. So why are you wearing blue shorts? Huh? Well, because I like the color. So you support police, huh? You hate black people? Is that what it is? I mean, it's pretty much what they're... It's how would they do it?
It's like, no, I can't play basketball in pants.
Yeah, I can't, like, I mean, run out of my underwear and play basketball, and I can't wear jeans to play basketball, so I'm wearing these shorts right now. Right. Just, like, leave him alone. I love that gif of him where he rolls his eyes at that one reporter and then, like, slides off. That's one of my favorite gifs. I really hope that if somebody asks him a stupid question like this that he does it. I don't even know what he believes. Just leave the man alone. Leave all of them alone. Let them play the damn game and bring us joy. Stop it. I don't want to see none of y'all reporters out here doing this with baseball players either. You leave my cards alone. Ooh, I have flip-flops on right now. I will take one off. Kane, I'm sorry. Today in stupidity, that's I would right. not shut up.
De Blasio, believe it or not, we said a lot of stupid things this past week, but here's another one.
We now have fewer people in our jails than any time since World War II. Oh, and man. We are safer for it
is
and
that,
better for
is that
it.
Why you're safer? Because you have fewer people in jail?
Because they let them all
is
out.
Safer?
God, we put all the criminals out on the streets.
Right, so we're safer.
It's amazing. By the way, health officials from numerous states have mistakenly included apparently positive results from antibody tests when reporting new COVID cases to the CDC, which grossly inflated new cases. It's like double dipping scientifically. That comes from a doctor on Twitter. It's verified. That's a news story to watch for tonight. Have a great weekend. God bless.